Good afternoon. 4:30 and 57 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Dan Conte.
And I'm Ashley Chapman.
You want to be able to go back home and you want to be able to look your constituents in the eye and say, House Resolution 2, I knew exactly what was in that bill when I voted on it.
Democratic State Representative Rocky Adkins argues for transparency in today's opening session of the Kentucky House. The new minority leader sparked the first debate of the 2017 assembly.
The U.S. Attorney for Eastern Kentucky is resigning.
And gas prices in Moorhead are among the highest in Eastern Kentucky.
In sports, the UK Wildcats hit the hardwood at Rupp tonight. They take on Texas A&M.
But Luke has the stocks.
Cloudy with more rain possible tonight. Lows in the mid-30s. The complete forecast after this news.
Republicans now hold a supermajority in the Kentucky House, and Jeff Hoover made his first address as House Majority Leader today. Will Clark has the story.
Becoming the first Republican to hold the gavel in the Kentucky House since 1921, Jeff Hoover told the chamber to look at Kentucky's challenges as opportunities to do great things before offering guidance to members of his party.
The campaign is now over. It's a part of history. And the job before us is now to begin the governing process.
Hoover replaces Democrat Greg Stumpo, who was defeated in the general election. I'm Will Clark.
House Democrats have elected State Representative Rocky Adkins to lead the caucus through its first session as the minority party. The Moorhead lawmaker was elected without opposition following a nearly two-hour closed-door meeting. Adkins had been the majority floor leader when Democrats were in power, but Republicans won 64 of the legislature's 100 seats in November, winning a majority for the first time since 1921. Democrats also elected Dennis Keene of Wilder as Minority Caucus Chairman and Wilson Stone of Scottsville as Minority Whip. Adkins says he hopes to work with the Republican majority when he can, but promised to voice opposition on policies the party disagrees with.
Well, that new Republican majority in the House this afternoon passed a resolution spelling out changes in the way that the House will conduct its business. The vote came after GOP members defeated a motion by Minority Leader Rocky Adkins of Rowan County that asked for a one-day delay so that all members of the House could study the changes and assess their impact. The Democrat says they haven't had a chance to do that.
Be cautious as we move forward here, and I'm talking to the majority and the minority here, that all we want to do is to place this on the clerk's desk, give us a chance to look at it overnight. We come back in here tomorrow. Everybody has full understanding then of what you are voting on as you push that button for many of your first votes.
Adkins says members should be able to explain to constituents what they voted for and why. Republican Stan Lee of Fayette County says changes advocated by the GOP are what voters asked for 2 months ago.
I think it's important to recognize what happened on election night. The citizens of the Commonwealth decided they wanted a new majority. The citizens of the Commonwealth decided that they wanted a new majority to take care of everything, and not in a little way, but in a big way.
Lee says Republicans made similar appeals when Democrats were in charge, but it was to no avail.
An Eastern Kentucky GOP lawmaker says now that Republicans have control of both chambers of the state legislature, the pressure is now on them to get some positive things done for the Commonwealth during the 2017 session. Representative Jill York says Republicans in the House can no longer spend their time railing against the majority because they are now the majority and can't put bills forward they know won't pass simply to promote their agenda.
As members of the majority party now, all of us GOP members in the House have a new responsibility. As majority party members, when we put something on the table for consideration, it is in a spot where it can come up in committee and it can be voted on. It may very well happen because of the numbers.
November's elections gave Republicans a 64-36 supermajority in the House. It's the first time they've had control of the chamber since 1921.
The president of the Kentucky AFL-CIO says if the new Republican-dominated State General Assembly approves a so-called right-to-work law this year, the wages of all Kentucky workers will suffer, not just those who belong to labor unions. The prediction is from Bill Londrigan and was made on CN2's Pure Politics.
When you look at what happens in states that pass right-to-work laws, so-called right-to-work laws, we end up with lower wages, which are on average about $1,500 a year lower in right-to-work states. So the effect is very negative for workers in Kentucky.
Londrigan says proponents of a right-to-work law argue it will bring more business to Kentucky, but the union leader says the Commonwealth is already doing very well recruiting and keeping new companies. He says there's no evidence to support claims that the 26 states which have already passed such laws are outperforming Kentucky economically.
Kentucky Attorney General Andy Beshear says Republicans now claiming that the state's Democratic Party is dead haven't studied history very well. Beshear is one of two Kentucky Democrats still holding state offices following the GOP's landslide victory in November. Republicans now control the House, Senate, and the governor's office, and that prompted longtime GOP political operative Scott Jennings to declare the demise of Kentucky's Democratic Party. Beshear says it's not so.
The Kentucky Democratic Party isn't dead. This is a new media party. Not necessarily a creation, but you see it every 2 or every 4 years. When President Obama was first elected, you saw all the national pundits say the Republican Party was dead. During this election, you saw all the national pundits saying the Republican Party can never win the presidency again because of the map.
Beshear says those pundits were wrong. He predicts Kentucky Democrats will bounce back in future elections.
Former Kentucky House Speaker Greg Stumbo says he'd like to see President-elect Donald Trump's promise to revive the coal industry come true. However, the Prestonsburg Democrat has his doubts. Stumbo appeared on WKYT's Newsmakers program.
Nobody in the state hopes that that happens more than I do. I pray that he can do that because I've seen the people in my district, for example, who've lost their jobs, they've lost their way of life. I don't know that he can. I was disillusioned somewhat when Senator McConnell announced, I believe 3 days after the election, well, there's not really a war on coal. It's a free market problem, and so there's not much government can do about it.
Stumbo says he's been calling for the federal government to build coal-fired plants in the Appalachian region and use them as models for clean coal technology.
The top prosecutor for the Eastern District of Kentucky is stepping down before Republican President-elect Donald Trump takes office later this month. U.S. Attorney Kerry Harvey says he is resigning effective January 13th. U.S. attorneys are political appointees who customarily step down when a person of another political party becomes president. Harvey has served in the post since 2010. He says it's been a distinct honor to hold the post. Harvey adds that the office has become a national leader in federal prosecution of drug overdose cases under his leadership, in addition to securing multiple public corruption convictions, including those of former Agricultural Commissioner Richie Farmer and former Personnel Cabinet Secretary Tim Longmire.
Drug overdose death rates in Boyd County increased in 2016. MSPR's Samantha Morrill has details.
According to the Ashland Independent, County Coroner Mark Hammond is reporting that drug overdoses killed 29 people in Boyd County last year. That's up from 21 in 2015. Pending further toxicology testing, that number could go up for the county and the state. The rising number of fatalities in Kentucky has been linked to the heroin epidemic that has gripped Appalachia. According to the Kentucky Injury Prevention and Research Center, an average of 1,074 Kentuckians have fatally overdosed each year since 2011. Reporting for MSPR, I'm Samantha Morrill.
A 43-year-old Carlisle woman will be sentenced January 13th after pleading guilty to a manslaughter charge in connection with a fatal traffic accident in Montgomery County. The Mount Sterling Advocate reports that police claim Jenny Pelfrey was driving under the influence of drugs when she caused a June 2015 crash that took the life of 86-year-old Earl Manley of Sharpsburg. Prosecutors allege that blood samples taken from Pelfrey after the mishap showed hydrocodone and Xanax in her system. The accident occurred on Maysville Road near its intersection with Bunker Hill and Van Thompson Roads. Pelfrey is to appear for sentencing before Montgomery County Circuit Judge Beth Mays.
The Lewis County Herald is reporting that several outbuildings near Vanceburg were destroyed by fire Sunday night. The Vanceburg Volunteer Fire Department was called to the scene, which was behind the old Purina feed building, around 11 o'clock. Crews from Vanceburg, Lewis County, Black Oak, and Garrison say three different buildings were burning, and it took about an hour to extinguish the fires. The cause has yet to be determined, and the investigation continues.
A pair of fatal traffic accidents in the same location on Kentucky 134 in McGoffin County come as no surprise to a local resident, Marion Howard. Both crashes happened on a bridge between mile markers 66 and 67. Howard spoke with WYMT. He says there have been other serious accidents at that location as well.
3 days before that, there were two wrecks the same day, about 4 hours apart, same place. You know, it changes and turns the world upside down in just a heartbeat.
Howard says something needs to be done to improve safety at that spot.
Moorhead has some of the highest gas prices in eastern Kentucky. That is according to a website that tracks fuel costs daily in the Commonwealth. GasBuddy.com says regular unleaded fuel in Moorhead is selling for $2.49. It's $2.44 in West Liberty and $2.42 in Ashland. Meanwhile, motorists in Maysville are paying $2.35. Gas is going for $2.28 in Grayson and $2.24 in Mount Sterling. The lowest prices in Kentucky today are in Franklin and Henderson, where fuel costs $2.05. Gas prices in the Commonwealth have risen an average of 15 cents over the past month.
The Morgan County Fiscal Court is receiving nearly $81,000 in emergency road repair money from the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet. Spokesman H.B. Elkins says the funds will be used to make slip repairs to Hot Mix Road, less than a mile east of Kentucky 519. The Fiscal Court will administer the project.
Flemingsburg's new police chief is on duty. Brian Bowling took over for Randy Sargent on New Year's Day. Mayor Marty Voyer says one of Bowling's first goals will be to improve public support for his department.
He has a great rapport with folks. He has some wonderful ideas about engaging the public and civic organizations and trying to make our force more of a community policing type force than maybe that sometimes we have been in the past.
Bowling is a 22-year veteran of the Kentucky State Police. He served as the commander for the KSP's Moorhead Post for three of those years.
The Rowan County Historical Society is keeping its fingers crossed that the other two buildings in the old courthouse square in Moorhead will be given spots on the National Registry of Historic Places. Gary Lewis is the spokesman for the Historical Society. According to Lewis, the over 100-year-old courthouse was placed on the registry back in 1983, and his group thinks it's about time the county's former jail and its superintendent's office were added to the list.
The big thing with this modification is that, you know, we may be able to, if there are any available, you know, look for grant monies that will help us complete our project, you know, such as the heating and air. And eventually we're going to have a roof put on that old build, that old jail too. But it has an effect on what funds you might get, you know, through 501c3 organizations.
Lewis says the Rowan Historical Society's application was turned into the registry on December 12th. He expects it to be approved either in February or March.
And finally this afternoon, Carter Cave State Resort Park is gearing up for one of its most popular events. From January 26th through the 29th, the park will host its 8th annual Winter Adventure Weekend with 185 activities scheduled. Naturalist Coy Ainslie says there will be plenty to see and do.
It's kind of a very unique event that happens here in the last full weekend of January every year. This year, 185 different trips that are all going to deal with getting outside, everything from hiking, rock climbing, zip lining, fire building, winter survival skills, geocaching. I mean, the list goes on and on. A big part of it is caving.
And Ainslie says you must be at least 6 years old to participate in Winter Adventure Weekend. There's more information online at winteradventureweekend.com or by calling 606-286-4444. 1-1.
Taking a look at your weather forecast for the MSPR listening area, including the counties of Carter, Bath, and Rouen. Tonight's going to be cloudy, a 50% chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms with lows in the mid-30s. Wednesday will be cooler, partly sunny, with a 20% chance of scattered rain or snow showers and highs around 38. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, lows dropping to about 22 degrees. Thursday will be cloudy with a 50% chance of snow showers and highs in the upper 20s. Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of snow showers and lows dropping to about 18 degrees. Friday, mostly sunny with highs around 22. And Friday night, cold, partly cloudy with lows falling to 10 degrees. Temperatures for the surrounding area right now, it is currently 60 degrees in Ashland, 57 in Flemingsburg. Inez is sitting at 59 degrees. It is 58 degrees in Lexington, 57 degrees in Winchester, and it is currently 57 degrees right here on the campus of Morehead State University.
4:46, you are tuned to Mountain Edition on Morehead State Public Radio. It is great to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. On our feature segment, the Kentucky Coalition Against Domestic Violence is launching a rapid rehousing program for survivors of domestic abuse. The Kentucky News Connection's Greg Stottlemyre reports.
For the first time, a rapid rehousing program is being taken statewide to help victims of domestic violence. Using a $259,000 grant through the Kentucky Housing Corporation, the state's network of 15 shelters will provide rental assistance to at least 40 women in any Kentucky county except Jefferson and Fayette. Elizabeth Anderson with the Kentucky Coalition Against Domestic Violence says the goal is to help survivors quickly secure safe, affordable housing.
What we have found is that survivors who seek help from our shelters, they're typically citing housing as their number one need. If you can help secure safe housing for somebody, you're creating a stable environment to then be able to start working on any other needs that they might have.
Anderson says the program is designed to help those who have difficulty getting assistance through other programs because they are undocumented, have criminal records, or owe money to public housing authorities. Anderson says the huge shortage of subsidized housing in Kentucky adds to the barriers victims of domestic violence face as they try to leave their abuser. It's the challenge Mackenzie, a mother of two, says she faced over 9 years of verbal and physical abuse, a cycle of manipulation she says she couldn't break, in large part because of her partner's financial control.
We had a joint bank account, so everything that came in, he controlled. He knew what money I spent, and if I spent something, he would question it. So I was stuck.
Mackenzie, who lives in western Kentucky, says the rapid rehousing program will help women flee a bad situation quickly. She knows firsthand how crucial financial help can be for a family in the grip of domestic abuse.
Once I was able to see, okay, they're going to help me pay my rent. You know, they also gave me an electric voucher that helped me pay my electric bill. That right there was enough for me to say, okay, I can go. I can get out safely. I don't have to worry about him.
The Rapid Rehousing Program will provide rental and utility assistance for up to 12 months with the possibility of an extension. I'm Greg Stottlemyre reporting for Kentucky News Connection.
It is 4:49. You are tuned to Mountain Edition on Morehead State Public Radio. All Things Considered from NPR is coming up at 5 o'clock, and Chuck has sports. He's up right now.
The Cats do battle with the Aggies. Good afternoon. With Morehead State Public Radio Sports, I'm Chuck Mraz. The Kentucky basketball team will try to move to 2-0 in the SEC tonight as they square off with Texas A&M at 9 o'clock at Rupp Arena. Assistant coach Tony Barbie says the Wildcats know the Aggies will be prepared to give UK their best shot.
It's a big game. I mean, you're talking about the flagship program in the SEC, if not the country. And, you know, every other team in this league, you want to be at that in that position. You want to be the top dog. And to do that, you've got to beat the best. So it's a, you know, it's a different approach probably for your team. And as a coach, you mentally getting ready to come into Kentucky and play against one of Cal's teams and play at Rupp.
One of the nation's top offensive rebounding teams, Texas A&M is 8-4 this season and coming off of a 10-point loss to Tennessee. The interim coach of the Morehead State men's basketball teams thinks the Eagles are on the cusp of a turnaround. After Saturday's overtime loss in MSU's OVC opener at UT Martin, Preston Spradlin says his guys think they're close to stringing some wins together.
They understand that it's the little tiny things, and I say little things, but they're the most important things that you do. Those are very correctable things. Those are discipline things. Those are focused things that you must be locked in, you must have, and you must understand that's what it takes to beat good teams in this league.
The MSU men will host Eastern Illinois on Thursday evening at 7:45. On the flip side, the Morehead State women's basketball team is still flying high. Their 89-68 rout of UT Martin Saturday improved Coach Greg Todd's team to 12-3 overall and also helped them finish December with a perfect 7-0 mark.
Couldn't be happier for Fair Group, and wish we could keep 2016 for another month or two if we play that well.
The MSU women will try to move to 2-0 in the OVC as they face Eastern Illinois Thursday at 5:30 at Johnson Arena. Bengals cornerback Adam Pac-Man Jones is facing assault, disorderly conduct, and other charges after being arrested in Cincinnati's downtown entertainment district. Authorities say Jones is accused of pushing and poking someone in the eye and struggling with officers during his arrest, and spitting on a nurse while being booked into the Hamilton County Detention Center earlier today. He's been jailed on misdemeanor charges of assault, disorderly conduct, and obstructing official business, and a felony count of harassment with a bodily substance. 33-year-old Jones was being held pending an initial court appearance today. No attorney has been listed for him. Considering their lofty preseason aspirations, Cincinnati Bengals coach Marvin Lewis admits the team's 6-9-1 finish for 2016 was disappointing. However, Lewis maintains that disappointment doesn't carry over to the efforts of his players.
I've been pleased with what we are, the character and the work and so forth. We just didn't create enough to make this thing meaningful. The way the thing was scheduled was set, these last three games were going to be meaningful, and we didn't quite get it there.
Meanwhile, Lewis, who's entering the final year of his contract with the Bengals, says he's yet to talk with owner Mike Brown about a possible extension. Also from the NFL, health concerns are causing Denver coach Gary Kubiak to resign after just two seasons on the job and only a year after taking the Broncos to a Super Bowl title. He missed a week of work in October due to a complex migraine. While he'll miss coaching, Kubiak says he'll stay busy.
I'll probably take a little break, but I'm going to find something. I love this game. I love this league. I love players. I love teaching. I love all those things. So I'll find another passion. There's a lot of things to do in life.
In other notes, Coach Sean Payton is refuting reports he wants to leave New Orleans and plans to return to the Saints next season. And veteran running back Adrian Peterson says he'd consider a pay cut to return to the Minnesota Vikings next season. A knee injury limited him to just three games this year. Morehead State baseball coach Mike McGuire is eager to get his players back on campus, with the Eagles' first game set for February 17th at Jackson State. McGuire hopes his players have been staying in shape over the Christmas break.
Because when we get back in January, we only have a month until opening day. So, what we do from the end of fall practice until we get back in January goes a long ways to, preparing us to be ready to start the season.
McGuire says MSU's pitchers will get into a throwing program when they return, while the position players will start with some individual drills and some weight room work. And finally, Missouri Governor-elect Eric Greitens is standing firm on his decision to not support state funding for stadiums, including the proposed $200 million soccer stadium in downtown St. Louis. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch reports that Greitens, speaking Monday, said he has completely ruled out state funding for stadiums, making it unlikely that a request for $40 million in tax credits for the soccer stadium project will be granted. The investor group SCSTL is seeking up to $80 million in city funding, in addition to state tax credits, in hopes of building a stadium that will attract a Major League Soccer expansion team. A spokesman for SCSTL did not immediately respond to an interview request. That's sports for Morehead State Public Radio. I'm Chuck Mraz reporting.
It is 4:54. You are listening to Mountain Edition on Morehead State Public Radio. Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Single game and season tickets for men's and women's basketball are now on sale, including 16 OVC contests beginning January 5th with a doubleheader hosting Eastern Illinois. Tickets and more information from the Eagle Ticket Office, 783-2386, or online at msueagles.com. 4:55, we are a little bit late in getting our stock report this afternoon, so we will do things a bit out of order in the hopes of bringing you Bud Luke with his analysis of Wall Street action in just a moment. In the meantime, here's a recap of the weather forecast for the MSPR listening area. Tonight, a 50% chance of scattered rain showers and thunderstorms. Lows in the mid-30s. Wednesday, cooler. Partly sunny with a 20% chance of scattered rain or snow showers early. Highs around 38. Wednesday night, partly cloudy. Lows around 22. Thursday, cloudy with a 50% chance of snow showers. Highs in the upper 20s. Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of snow showers. Lows around 18. Friday, mostly sunny, highs around 22. Friday night, cold, partly cloudy with lows around 10. Around the region, it is 60 degrees in Ashland, 57 in Flemingsburg, 59 in Inez, 58 in Lexington, 57 in Winchester, and it is also 57 degrees on the campus of Morehead State University.
Offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. Stocks rose today on the first trading day of 2017, but did close off of their session highs as oil prices gave back initial gains, and the Dow Industrials did finish with a gain of 119.16 at 19,881.76. The S&P 500 was up 19 at 2257.83, and the NASDAQ Composite was up 45.97, finishing at 5429.08. New York Stock Exchange breadth was over 3-1 in favor of winning stocks over losers. Crude prices hit 18-month highs earlier amid hopes that a deal struck between OPEC and non-OPEC countries to cut production will reduce excess supply. And at session highs, U.S. crude prices had gained more than 2%. However, they settled just over 2.5% lower at $52.33 a barrel as concerns that Libya will increase production dampened investor enthusiasm. Overnight, Chinese stocks closed higher on the back of strong domestic data, with the Shanghai Composite rising 1.04%. China's main manufacturing purchasing managers index rose to 51.9, compared with 50.9 in November, and this handily beat forecasts. European equities also rose, with the Stock 600 Europe's, or I should say, the Stock 600 Europe index advancing almost 0.75%. And in U.S. economic news, the final read on December IHS market manufacturing PMI came in at 54.3, hitting a 21-month high. Also, a report on construction spending showed it at its highest level in more than 10 years for the month of November. U.S. Treasuries fell today in price, which meant rates were up, with the benchmark 10-year note rising to 2.45% and the short-term 2-year note trading at 1.22%. And gold futures for February delivery gained $9.30 to finish at $1,161 per ounce. Among Dow stocks, your best performers were Verizon and Nike, while your worst performers in the Dow were McDonald's.